Theranabelle presents Expanded Universe, Episode 1, The Turtle King, Part 1. Testing, testing. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. All right. So, my name is Anthony Eisenhower.
I work in the Public Institute of Records in
Hilchester, outside the capital. Realistically, this place is currently no more than a library, and I was a normal clerk scribe 2 hours ago, but things are always changing. The board of directors has since decided that our facility will now be dedicated to the vast number of personal records that have been created over the years. I have been appointed as the overseer of this location, and have been promised a full staff, though they do not start arriving until the beginning of next week. Our first task, as a newly minted institution, is to organize our collection. Luckily, the majority of the personal records are organized by era, person, and are in chronological order. The problem is that the oldest records we have, and those from the past couple decades, are a complete mess. Since this is now my responsibility, I shall be reorganizing and recording audio versions of these records on my personal pocket monitor, audio that you are currently listening to accompany the digital projections. The rest of my staff will be responsible for doing the same for the pre-organized bulk of the records, as well as tagging certain records together to form more complete accounts of events. From where I'm sitting, I am watching as they sweep through the building, removing the materials we had and replacing them with printed copies of the records, as well as inert artifacts that accompanied them. They are, of course, leaving the unorganized records at the door to my new office as I speak. It seems these stacks will be a fixture for me for a long, long time. It is probably time for me to stop stalling and get to the start of it. So, Record of one Ulysses Wayne, father of Vincent and Julie Deslebrar, and son of Alba and Arcadia Wayne, husband to Vanessa Deslebrar. Record of Quintus 13th, 4708, 2 days after Beltane. Audio recorded by Anthony Eisenhower, overseer of the Hilchester Collection of Personal Record. Record begins. We were on a mission deep in the Great Forest. I had always thought it was odd for it to be named that, but upon seeing it, I saw why it couldn't be compared to other forests. Where other forests would be marked on a regional map, maybe, this one was a main feature on the map of the continent itself. Intellectually, I had known it that it was big, but knowing intellectually did not prepare me for the experience. Riding toward the forest this morning, it was the horizon. As far as the eye could see, there were trees and green everywhere. We had seen it all day yesterday and part of the afternoon before, and it still took us till just before noon to hit the beginning of the trees. They began sparse and small, no taller than my head on Irian's back, and several lengths in between, like normal trees. But they grew taller and thicker, and the space in between grew crowded until we were winding around tall green giants. Not actual giants, mind you, but the trees got truly massive by the time I noticed, and only got bigger from there. We were still on the outer part of the forest by the time Rogers called a halt. Night came early in the forest, and we were only a couple hours deep, but it was already getting dark. "We'll camp here," he said, indicating the small clearing we were in. "You know the drill. We'll draw lots for watch later." He started to walk towards his Periton, then paused and turned. "Two at a time, though, tonight. I don't like trees this old." I slid out of Arian's saddle and started tending to him, unbuckling the saddle and bags and getting him some drake feed before using a brush to clean the scales around his neck and shoulders where he couldn't reach. I brushed his wrists, too, since there was thick forest gunk around where his folded-up wings attached to his wrist. I left him to his devices when I was done, going to look for some firewood since I was the only one with a self-cleaning mount. It was surprisingly dark already, the only light having to filter through layers upon layers of foliage. Also surprisingly, there was little to use for firewood. Most of what I found was already decomposing or was actually healthy growth, as if the forest had an immune system fighting off death itself. I had to circle round back the way we had came to find a tree that had been felled by the storm a few nights ago. I had to carry it all the way back before I could use my whip to splinter into useful pieces, the magic making fairly even sections and a lot of kindling. By the time I got back, the others had cleaned out the clearing and were setting the stones around the edge to conceal and protect the site to a degree. Dan and Stuart were setting up their tents while Rogers was high above us, standing on a thick branch and surveying the area. He saw me waving to him and came down. "Any sign of the trail?" I asked him. "We had been chasing a group of bandits that stole some technique guides from the Deslibrar family. As the consort of their eldest daughter, they had asked me to accompany the squad that Rogers led, saying that while the squad's main goal was the capture of the thieves, my orders were to reclaim the technique guides no matter what." "No sign of them so far," he said, "but their trail leads straight ahead. Why they made a beeline for this infernal place beyond me. The trees block most lines of sight, so you don't know what could just be on the other side of one of these trees." The squad leader shuddered then, obviously getting the heebie-jeebies from the forest. "Maybe they went in here for that exact reason," I said. "There's low visibility in here with all these trees."
"Especially if they know their way through the outer forest a bit. With their lead on us, they probably thought that they could disappear on us." "Maybe," Rogers said. "But I still don't like it. Here, just in case, I want you to have this." And he handed me a small comm marble. It was the size of an exceptionally large grape, and looked like there was a side that actually got pressed down, instead of just being touch sensitive. "If things go sideways, I want you to press that button. It'll send an SOS and your location to me, to the B-team, and back to the Deslibrar compound." "Thanks," I said. "No problem," Roger smiled. "I just don't want the young lady's lover to get taken up just because I got careless. I have to say, though, if these thieves were going up against anyone else, I think they wouldn't have had any trouble getting away clean. Too bad for them we've branded the Bloodhound Rogers with us, huh?" "Yeah," Rogers said, then seemed to think. "They should have known that, though. I've been the head of security for House Deslibrar for years. They would have known that they wouldn't have been able to lose me in a chase unless..." His eyes widened and he looked around, sniffing the air, one hand summoning his bow from the ether. He froze, and I freed my whip from my side. I had seen him search before, and him freezing meant one thing. He had the scent. He let out one long, low whistle, and Dan and Stuart dropped what they were doing to draw their weapons, just as the thieves dropped on us. Rogers reacted immediately, pivoting on one leg to face the sky and letting out a barrage of magic arrows, the bolts of light bringing down two or three foes. I turned to face the other way to guard the squad leader's back and found myself looking at two men getting up from where they had landed. They grinned and drew knives. I had no idea if those were their sacred weapons or not, but I had no choice. My whip sprung to life in my hands, catching one in the face and the other in the off hand in two quick strokes. The one whose face got hit dropped to the ground, clutching his face, screaming in agony. The other grunted in pain and took a jab at me. Normally in such a position, I would use my short sword to great avail, since seeing as that was with my bags on the other side of camp, I did the best next thing. I loaded my hand with magical power, dodged in close to the other man, and clamped my hand down onto his face. You see, unlike most of my family who were rangers or magicians, I was a spell sword. That meant that while I had less control over the magic in my vicinity, my magical power had a natural attribute to it. The attribute to my magic wasn't something like fire or water or any of the conventional magic types. No, the attribute to my magic, the concept that pervaded my magical power, was agony. So, having a handful loaded with my magic pressed firmly to your face was not a pleasant experience. The man screamed bloody murder for maybe 3 seconds before his eyes
rolled up into the back of his head as his nervous system said, "No, thank you." With both my opponents on the ground, I spared a moment to look around. Rogers was doing amazing, casting a binding spell around the wrist and ankles of everyone he had shot. He was actually doing so well that he blazed past me and bound the two I defeated as well. Stuart was down to his last opponent, with two bodies at his feet, but Dan wasn't doing too hot for herself. The smaller woman was cornered against a tree with three thieves taking turns poking at her, only being held back by her glaive. As I watched, one darted in as she was dealing with the other two and gave her another cut before dancing out of the way as she swung her weapon in his direction. That's the way I ran. "Hey!" I yelled as I cracked my whip out, catching the newest guilty party across his spine. He dropped, and Dan saw her chance. She danced between the two that were left, her glaive a song around her. They dropped like sandbags, and Rogers came up behind me to bind the one that was still alive. "Where did they come from?" Stuart asked as he walked over. "From above us," Roger replied. I had been smelling that something was wrong since we entered the forest. I hadn't thought that they were going to climb up even higher than I had. Everyone knows what lives in the canopy here. I shuddered at the thought of squirrels the size of horses, and drew out the token the Deslabars had given me. Now, it was supposed to react to the stolen guides, and if the thieves were here, the guides should be also. I walked around the perimeter of camp between the different groups of bodies and captives as the others spoke. "Look here, Captain. Same symbol as in the report," came Dan's voice. "Captain?" Squad leader may have been the head of security for years, but he was no captain. Still, in a symbolic sense, the name had prudence. I glanced over at the symbol indicated and saw a white circle with two triangles that had their points meeting in the middle of the circle. An hourglass? Odd choice for a bunch of thieves. Stuart was also walking around the bodies, going the opposite direction of me. He seemed to be counting. "Rogers?" he called. "I got some bad news for you." Everyone looked up at him. "The report says that the guides were stolen by a group of 6 thieves. I count 11 here." "Shit," Rogers said. "They were part of a larger group and made it to a rendezvous." The taller man began pacing as he tried to piece together the puzzle, but I needed to give him another piece. "Rogers?" "Yeah," he said, half turning. "Got some more bad news for you," I said. Rogers looked up and held my gaze. "You're not getting a reaction, are you?" "Absolutely nothing," I said. "The guides aren't here." That's all the time I have to record for now. I'll be recording like this whenever I have time in between my other duties. I guess I'll see you next time. Expanded Universe is a podcast that is part of the Theranabelle canon. Today's episode was written, performed, and directed by Theranabelle, and it was produced by a surprising amount of Thai food. Visit Theran's website to learn more about his writing and to view the show notes. Credit for the music goes to The Bulwark from Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks for listening.